It's Sunday, April 12th, and welcome to Higher IQ. Today is the final round of the Masters, and even if you don't care about golf, there's a story inside Augusta National Golf Club that's worth your attention. It's a place where a pimento cheese sandwich costs $1.50, where cell phones are banned, where spectators are called patrons and told not to cheer when a player makes a mistake, and where the waitlist for tickets hasn't accepted new applications since the year 2000. It's also a place that didn't admit a black member until 1990 and didn't admit a woman until 2012. The Masters is the most controlled experience in American sports, and the way it operates tells you something about how exclusivity, tradition, and money actually work when one institution decides it doesn't have to play by anyone else's rules. Augusta National was built on land that was once an indigo plantation worked by enslaved people. In the 1850s, the property became Fruitland Nurseries, one of the most successful horticultural operations in the Southeast, which is why the course is famous for its azaleas and dogwoods. Bobby Jones, a legendary amateur golfer, and Clifford Roberts, a Wall Street investment banker, co-founded the club in 1933 and held the first tournament in 1934. It was originally called the Augusta National Invitational. Roberts changed the name to the Masters in 1939. Roberts ran the club with absolute authority for decades. His philosophy was control. He dictated everything from the height of the grass to the behavior of the spectators to who could and couldn't set foot on the property. His most quoted line captures the ethos: "As long as I'm here, the players will be all white and the caddies will be all black." That wasn't metaphor. Augusta required all caddies to be black, a rule that persisted for decades. The club didn't invite a black golfer to compete until Lee Elder played in 1975. It didn't accept a black member until 1990, and that only happened because a racism scandal at another club, Shoal Creek in Alabama, created national pressure that Augusta couldn't ignore. The club didn't accept a female member until 2012, when Condoleezza Rice and Darla Moore were admitted after years of public pressure. Today, the club has approximately 300 members. Reports suggest roughly 9 are black and 6 are women. The exclusivity extends to everything. Membership is invitation only. There is no application process. The club doesn't publish its roster, its finances, or its fees. Reported members include Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and Roger Goodell. You cannot buy your way in. You have to be chosen. The caddy rule deserves a closer look because it wasn't just discriminatory in the abstract. It was economically significant. For decades, local black men built careers as Augusta caddies, developing deep expertise in the course's slopes, speeds, and hidden breaks. They formed generational relationships with players. Some became locally famous for their knowledge. When the club opened caddying to outside professionals in 1983, most of whom were white, it effectively ended the livelihoods of the black caddies who had worked the course for decades. The men who had been good enough to guide the best golfers in the world through the most demanding course in the country were replaced. The expertise they'd built over lifetimes didn't transfer to other employment. The rule that once mandated their presence was the same system that made their displacement invisible. The concession prices are the detail that goes viral every year, and they're worth understanding because they reveal something about how the economics of the place actually work. A pimento cheese sandwich costs $1.50. It's been $1.50 since 2002. When the sandwich first appeared on the menu in 1934, it cost 30 cents, which adjusted for inflation is over $7. The price has actually gone down in real terms over 90 years. Nothing else on the menu costs more than $3 for food or $6 for beer. The chairman of Augusta National said in 2007, "We take certain things very, very seriously. Like the cost of a pimento cheese sandwich is just as important as how high the second cut of grass is going to be. The reason the food is cheap is that the food isn't the product. The experience is the product, and the experience is priced through scarcity. Tickets are distributed through a lottery held nearly a year in advance. There's also a patron badge waitlist, but it's so long that it stopped accepting new names after a brief window in 2000. That was 26 years ago. If you want to attend the final round through secondary markets, tickets start above $6,000. Four-day badges have been listed above $20,000. Forbes estimated the tournament's total revenue at $141 million, with concessions contributing just $8 million of that. Augusta makes almost nothing on the sandwiches. It makes enormous amounts on everything else. The cheap food is a deliberate inversion of how every other sports venue operates, and it works because Augusta doesn't need to extract revenue from every transaction. We don't need to squeeze you. We chose to let you in. The control extends to the broadcast. Unlike most golf tournaments, which negotiate TV deals through the PGA Tour, Augusta handles its own television contract directly with CBS and ESPN. The club controls the broadcast, not the network. CBS cannot show a shot Augusta doesn't approve of. Announcers reportedly receive guidelines on what they can and cannot say on air. The result is a telecast that feels different from any other sporting event, slower, more reverent, almost liturgical. That's not an accident. It's production designed by an institution that treats its own narrative the way it treats its greens. Even the green jacket, the most iconic trophy in golf, operates by Augusta's logic. Members receive one when they join. Champions keep theirs for a year, then must return it to the club. The jacket can be worn on the grounds, but not off them. When one surfaced at auction in the 1990s, Augusta tracked it down and bought it back. You don't own your relationship with Augusta National. Augusta owns it. That signal, the message that Augusta operates by its own rules, is the thread that connects the cheap sandwiches to the racial exclusion, to the banned cell phones, to the whispered applause. Augusta National is an institution that has decided it answers to no one. When Martha Burke of the National Council of Women's Organizations pressured the club to admit women in 2002, Chairman Hootie Johnson's response was to drop all television sponsors for that year's tournament rather than appear to bend to outside pressure. The club ran the Masters with no commercials. It could afford to, because Augusta National doesn't need sponsors. It needs sponsors less than sponsors need it. This is what makes Augusta interesting beyond golf. It's a case study in what happens when an institution has so much cultural capital and so little financial need that it can resist every external force, market pressure, social pressure, media pressure, for as long as it wants. It changed its racial policies, not because it wanted to, but because the reputational cost finally exceeded the cost of change. It admitted women not because of a moral reckoning, but because the pressure had built for a decade and the optics became untenable. The cheap sandwich and the excluded member are products of the same underlying logic. This is our house, and we decide what happens in it. So if this comes up in conversation, here's how to think about it. The Masters is the most tightly controlled event in American sports, built on a former plantation, run for decades by a man who explicitly enforced racial segregation, and operated today by a club with 300 members who answer to no sponsors, no shareholders, and no public pressure they don't choose to acknowledge. The $1.50 pimento cheese sandwich isn't generosity. It's a signal. We have so much power that we don't need your money. The excluded members weren't an oversight. They were policy. Augusta National is a place that reveals what institutions do when they have the resources to resist the world. Sometimes what they do is keep the sandwiches cheap. Sometimes what they do is keep the doors closed. Often it's both at the same time. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.